Get ready to rumble. Shilling Show Unleashed on the Seven Thunders Media Network. Former city councilor, husband, father, and community watchdog. Your host, Rob Shilling.
Welcome to the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Remember, your direct support makes our show possible, and you can directly support this podcast by visiting shillingshow.com and then clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page to make a monthly contribution. We appreciate your support. Shilling Show Unleashed podcast welcomes Dan Lyman, the founder and editor at BorderHawk.news, and today's topic is an immigration update. We've got a lot of problems. Dan Lyman, welcome to the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast.
Great to be back with you, Rob. Thank you.
You took a trip to the border recently, and you've done this many times, but in the most recent trip, before we get into specifics, what were your general observations about the state of things?
Yep. So we just took the BorderHawk team down to Eagle Pass, Texas, and that region, and also into Mexico to do some recon, to do some reporting, to see what things are looking like on the ground there. I don't know how many of your listeners will be familiar, but Eagle Pass, it has been one of the busiest crossing areas along the border, kind of an epicenter of the Biden border invasion. In recent years, I would say, but particularly in 2023, was just absolute madness. On some days, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people in a given day. We had a month where they averaged over 2,000 per day towards the end of 2023. So we went down to that region to see what things are like at the moment. And we also went into Mexico to see what things were like on that side as well, because, of course, they're passed through these border towns in Mexico in order to reach the United States. Seeing things from that side is really an interesting perspective, and we'll get into that as we move forward. But at the moment, things are actually a little bit quiet in that area because there has been a crackdown by state officials and Mexican officials on the Mexican side in that particular border state of Coahuila. And there has also been a crackdown by Texas authorities on the other side. So at the moment, the flows are a little lighter than they were towards the end of 2023. But according to our sources, they are starting to pick back up again as the weather improves and as a bottleneck of migrants down in the south of Mexico has started to break free.
We hear about this, and then you mentioned the fact that the Mexican military has been cracking down to some extent. That tells me, and it probably tells you, that there's some operational control that is being at discretion ramped up or ramped down. So what did you find out about this crackdown and the purpose of the ramp ups and the ramp down?
Yes, indeed. It's pretty clear that when the governments of our respective nations want to reduce the flow of illegal migrants passing through our countries and into the United States, into our interior, they can do so when they want to. And our understanding is that things were getting so bad towards the end of 23 that the U.S. government, that the Biden administration sent a delegation headed by, I believe, Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, down to have a meeting with AMLO and the administration in Mexico. And they struck a deal whereby the Mexican authorities would begin to restrict the flows for a time period. The reason that we're actually seeing restricted flows into Texas, but not necessarily into Arizona, people will say, oh, well, I've seen people are still coming in. Yes, they are. They're coming in via different crossings. And the reason for that is some of the states that are along the U.S. border in Mexico are controlled by the cartels, and they, of course, don't play by the same rules that the Mexican government does. However, the state of Coahuila, which borders Eagle Pass, as I mentioned, they are ruled over by Mexican authorities there and state authorities, and the cartels don't have quite as much of a presence there. And so where the Mexican government does have control, they have reduced the number of illegal migrants passing through. And in many cases, towards the beginning of 2024, they were actually not really deporting, but relocating migrants who had made it all the way north and were preparing to enter the U.S. They were actually rounding them up, putting them on planes and flying them back down to the south of the country to reduce the amount that were coming into Texas at that time. And I am told that while that worked temporarily, like I said, it created a sort of a bottleneck and a massing of migrants down in the south of Mexico, that where it's just become untenable, and they started to break free again, and they're starting to make their way north again. So we should expect that flows will increase as we head into the spring and the summer. Optimally, in terms of an election, from election perspective, it will look really bad on the Biden administration again, but ultimately it means more damage to our country and more illegal migration into the U.S. as things get worse and worse.
It certainly does, Dan. And so I'm thinking about this dichotomy between the military and the cartels. Is there one that's clearly in charge? In other words, if the cartels chose to go back and take that area over where the military has operational control right now, could they do that, or vice versa?
That balance within Mexico is pretty delicate, and it's a long-running, decades-long thing. So where the Mexican authorities and the military have control, I don't see them ceding control to the cartels anytime soon. But then there, of course, there are areas in Mexico that are almost completely controlled by the cartels. And there is cooperation between authorities and the cartels in that regard. But like I said, where we were on the other side in Piedras Negras, which is the city that is opposite Eagle Pass, there was a heavy military presence. They were patrolling the streets. They had command bases, all along the Rio Grande. And what's interesting is we have a correspondent in Piedras who has documented what's gone on there for a while and just done an incredible job. And towards the end of last year, one of the last mass illegal crossings into Eagle Pass, he actually embedded with the migrants as they made their way out of the shelter. And we'll talk about that shelter here in a bit, and made their way to the Rio, which requires basically hiking along trails and the brush and in the forests and all that. And there were Mexican soldiers actually guarding the trails in order to make the passage easier for the migrants to pass through on their way to the U.S. So there was some sort of switch that was flipped right at the end of the year, in the beginning of 2024, where soldiers went from basically aiding in mass illegal crossings to shutting them down. We think that can all be tied back to the deal that was struck. Now the questions are that we're trying to answer is, who's paying for this? Are Americans paying for this now, for the Mexican military to carry out this large-scale operation? Because a lot of these guys are living at the border for weeks on end. We actually saw small campsites that the soldiers are using. They're actually putting a lot of effort into this, and it's not an easy life. And we do commend them on their work on that side. We're thankful that they're doing what they do to aid us in keeping the flows restricted. But how long will that hold up? And why was it implemented, recently? Of course, we're tracing this back to what we think is a deal that was struck, but it's just frustrating to know that when the will is there, the political will is there, that they can shut things down. And of course, the day that they decide to end that operation, it will just start all over again for us here in America.
Dan, this calls for speculation, but oftentimes listeners who are so frustrated over this issue generally have suggested that the U.S. send the military down to take out the cartels. Is that even a practical solution? Would that solve anything? Is it possible?
Like you said, it's a speculative answer, and I'm just offering my opinion here, but I think that if we were to continue any foreign entanglements at this point, that would probably be one of the most effective that we could execute. Unfortunately, our priorities are far further from the U.S. border, but I would love to see our boys brought home and new mission put in their hands, and basically to wipe out these criminal networks that are operating just south of the border, because, of course, they are carrying out now one of the largest drug running operations, definitely the largest child trafficking operation, and certainly one of the largest human trafficking operations in world history at this point.
The migrant shelter, you have a video. You were actually in this facility. Tell us about the facility itself and how you got in there. That was pretty remarkable footage.
Yes, indeed. And we have to give so much credit to our correspondent and colleagues on the ground in Mexico for getting us in. But effectively, there is one lone shelter through which many, many, many migrants, tens of thousands, perhaps even hundreds of thousands in recent years, have passed on their way into the U.S. This shelter is called La Casa del Migrante. It's right in Piedras Negras. It's not far from the river. It's in the city proper. At the peak, like I said, in some days where there'd be 2,000 people passing through to reach the U.S., this shelter basically would take in up to approximately 1,000 migrants, and they would be given just a few hours to recharge their phones, recharge their own personal batteries in their bodies, and, you know, maybe catch a hot meal or at least some water, maybe a snooze. And then our understanding, and we reported on this extensively, was that they would be provided with GPS coordinates instructing them where to gather on the riverbank in order to execute mass illegal crossings into the U.S. So people have probably seen some of the incredible footage of thousands of people gathered under the bridges in Eagle Pass. There's two main thoroughfares that pass between Mexico and the U.S. And those are kind of used as staging sites or used as processing areas. One of them now has garnered a lot of national headlines, Shelby Park. That looks now like the DMZ between the Koreas. It is totally fenced off, a huge military presence there, totally controlled by the military and the police. But in the past, that is located under a bridge. In the past, that was where thousands and thousands of migrants who illegally entered the U.S. were gathered after crossing the Rio. And the vast majority of them passed through the shelter, as I mentioned, in Eagle Pass, which is in Piedras Negras, which is operated by Doctors Without Borders, American Red Cross has a presence there, Catholic Charities have a presence there. And so we were the first American media team to be allowed to bring cameras inside while we were there. And there were a couple hundred migrants staying there at the time. The majority of them are trying to access appointments with Customs and Border Protection through the CBP One app, which is basically a whitewashing of illegal migration at this point that is being facilitated by the Biden administration. But anyways, these people, they wait in there, they apply for CBP One appointments. They're pretty hesitant to go out on the streets now because of the presence of the military and the police there, and they have been rounding up any illegals that are wandering around the city. So basically these people wait inside, they apply until they get an appointment. And then basically twice a day, a few dozen make their way to the international bridge with their appointment in hand. And they meet with CBP officers on the bridge and they're walked into the U.S. and given immigration hearings, and which are usually many, many years in the future. And many of them are also given work authorization to work in the United States. On this day when we went, there were a couple hundred staying there, which was a steep contrast to the thousands that have passed through in recent months. But we were told that that couple hundred was an increase from a few dozen a few months ago, indicating that, of course, the numbers are rising again. So we got about 15 minutes of incredible experience inside and footage, talking to migrants and just seeing what it was like in there, speaking with some of the people that had already gotten CBP One appointments. Presumably, you know, an illegal migrant was going to make his way into the U.S., he told us, through the CBP One app, and he already had family and a job waiting for him in California. And if I understood him correctly, he said he was going to be working at the Ritz in Lake Tahoe. So that was an interesting little tidbit. Unfortunately, our time in there was cut short. We were in the middle of an interview, and our security team noticed a few guys starting to encircle us and speaking to each other on cell phones, and one of them flashed a large knife handle at one of our security guards. And so we broke off our interview and got out of there pretty quick. We sensed that our time was up in there. But we did get some incredible footage, and it's the whole report was released last night on BorderHawk.news and BorderHawk News on Twitter.
Yeah, it was a pretty harrowing situation. Do you have any idea who those people were that went after you, that tried to get you out, and for what purpose?
We don't. We were not able to find that out. We noticed a couple of new cars parked outside with guys on phones as well. Looked like they were communicating with the guys on the inside. We don't know if the guys on the inside were cartel, if they were handlers of some kind, if they were traffickers, or if they were just ne'er-do-well migrants. We really don't know.
The Shilling Show Unleashed podcast continues with our guest Dan Lyman in just a moment.
Get your fix online at shillingshow.com.
Shillingshowmedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
Shillingshowmedia.com will take your project from conception to completion.
Shillingshowmedia.com is reasonably priced and highly professional.
Need a website for your business? Visit shillingshowmedia.com.
Need a video created or edited? Visit shillingshowmedia.com.
Have a photography or graphic design project? Visit shillingshowmedia.com.
ShillingShowMedia.com is your one-stop shop for websites, audio and video production, and photography.
Visit ShillingShowMedia.com. That's ShillingShowMedia.com.
Get your fix. Shilling Show Unleashed.
We return now on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Dan Lyman is founder and editor of BorderHawk.news, talking about recent travels to the southern border and into Mexico. I want to go next to one that I was wondering if I was watching the Middle East or America, as you saw this tunnel system below El Paso, some of them constructed, some of them hand dug. Tell us what you observed.
Yes, indeed. We have a reporter. It's actually my brother who has been on your show many times, and I'm sure you'll have him on to talk about this more extensively. But he is stationed on the border for us for the coming weeks right now to get more footage along in Texas. And he's in Arizona now and heading out to California to get a broad scope of view of what's going on, because it varies so much from region to region. In El Paso, actually, he had a couple of really interesting experiences, but we'll start with the tunnels. We have a contact on the ground there, another amazing border reporter named Anthony Aguero. He took WID down into the tunnel system beneath El Paso. And some of these tunnels are just part of the infrastructure. So they're drainage tunnels. You know, they run under the highway for debris to pass back and forth and water and all that. And these tunnels are used by traffickers and illegal aliens in order to pass underneath the city, so to speak, and in some cases underneath the actual border between Juarez and El Paso. This is a common practice. This has been going on for a long time. Doesn't really get much attention. We've covered it for a long time. I was amazed last night. WID was on Laura Ingraham's show on Fox News, and she said she had never heard anything about this, which surprised me because I think she's pretty in tune with the immigration issue. We've known about these tunnels for a while. Like I said, many of them are just part of the infrastructure, but now they're being used by traffickers and illegals, criminals and cartels. Some of them that WID encountered looked to be a little more homemade, so to speak. So one of these tunnels looked like it had been dug out by human hands quite recently. Mm-hmm. It looked like that was kind of like, I don't know, an area for hideout, basically. He found caves and also these hand-dug tunnels. We're trying to figure out what exactly those were for. There was clothing down there. There were some supplies in those tunnels. There's a variety of different kinds of tunnels, but they are used specifically by people looking to slip into the city, slip into the interior as undetected as possible.
So what could or should be done about those tunnels, given that let's talk particularly about the infrastructure tunnels, how could they be secured?
We're told that Border Patrol does go down there occasionally. They patch up holes that are created in order to make access points. We see now that not only is Border Patrol stretched so thin in terms of their ability to operate in the field, they're basically just processing agents at this point. So we see that they can't even handle the job description at this point, nor does there seem to be too much political will to even do so. So it just seems like these tunnels are so low on the priority list. Not to mention, we saw this during my time in Texas, but we continue to document this all along the border. There is just a maddening absurdity to the lack of actual barrier between the United States and Mexico. There is, of course, great examples of the effort that the Trump administration made to put up pretty effective 30-foot barrier. And we did get to see that in person. But there's just so many places where it doesn't exist, where it ends. There's massive gaps. There's even gates that are left open all day in the barrier, which we witnessed. But then there are areas where there's just nothing at all. To care about the tunnels really is kind of like a non-issue when there isn't even proper structure at ground level. I guess I have to say, I don't think it would be a priority. It's just frustrating. It's just maddening to see this lack of care for what's going on. I'll give you one more example. Mm-hmm. In Sunland Park, which is right next to El Paso, it's a town on the border in New Mexico. Our reporter was there and he was, you know, filming at the border barrier. And in some areas, it looks great. And then in one area, which is known for busy with trafficking and cartel activity, there was just basically the equivalent of a cinder block between the U.S. and Mexico in this gap. It was a block of concrete approximately 12 or 18 inches tall. And that was the only thing preventing anyone from passing between the two countries. So unless they tripped on their way through, nothing was going to stop them. Going back to your question, I don't think the tunnels really matter at all at this point when you don't have anything at ground level in some places.
There was also, Dan, some very concerning footage, foreign thugs attacking the Border Hawk team outside of an illegal alien shelter in El Paso. I could hardly believe my eyes as I'm watching this car and these menacing illegal aliens coming up to the vehicle threatening you.
And what's so disturbing is that the police didn't seem to care. So our reporter was passing by this well-known, it's a Catholic church, but it's well-known as a shelter for illegals. They loiter outside all day. There's food trucks outside. Basically, if they're on church property, then immigration laws can't be, you know, enforced. So they're there as, you know, as in a sort of an asylum, but they're allowed to come and go as they please all over the neighboring the streets and all that. My brother was actually passing by in his vehicle, and he just had his cell phone up, and he was just filming through the passenger window as he was driving by, because it was quite a scene. I mean, it's just wild seeing dozens and dozens of people just loitering all over the sidewalk and the trash and the filth everywhere. He got stuck at a stop sign behind another car next to a food truck and trapped in from behind by another car, which wouldn't matter in any other case. However, group of men saw that he was filming and started flipping him off and cursing him out in Spanish. And then they got off of the wall that they were sitting on and approached his vehicle. And so he couldn't go anywhere in that moment because, like I said, he was trapped. So he rolls up the windows, and at least three of these guys come up. They start pounding on the window. They start trying the door latches. So if his doors weren't locked, we don't even know what would happen in that situation, and pounding on the doors. And that was obviously a pretty harrowing moment for him. Eventually, they gave up after they realized they couldn't get into the car. And as he was driving away, they threw rocks at his vehicle and actually struck his vehicle with rocks. So he was a little shaken up, totally understandably so. He actually had to take evasive action because he couldn't get out from this line of traffic. He had to kind of, you know, pull it back up and, you know, pull into the oncoming traffic lane. So it was a pretty hairy escape. He phoned El Paso police, the non-emergency line, explained what had happened. And they basically shrugged their shoulders. And he said, I'm wondering if you're planning to take any action, or are you going to investigate this? And they said, we can't comment on the action that we're going to take at this time. So that's what they told the victim of a crime that was committed by illegal aliens, presumably. And so we talked to our contact on the ground in El Paso, and he explained that there are just constant reports of criminality and incidents at that particular church shelter, and the police basically just throw their hands up and they don't do anything at all. And so we see, you know, what it looks like. This is perfect example of anarcho-tyranny. These people are allowed to do whatever they want. They're allowed to attack American citizens, damage the property of American citizens, no enforcement whatsoever, no investigation. But of course, we know what would happen if perhaps you or I went and vandalized the vehicle or attacked the vehicle of a fellow American citizen. We know what that would probably look like. We'd probably be in jail right now.
We probably would. And speaking of being in jail, there's a new law in Texas which is allowing some local law enforcement, state law enforcement intervention in people who are in the country illegally. And what do you know about that? There's a lot of threats from the national media that this is going to be overturned by the courts. At least they seem to hope so.
It looks like it. I have to be honest, yesterday we were completely tied up with reports and many media hits. And right as I was closing out for the day, I saw that the Supreme Court placed an indefinite hold on that immigration law. So it looks like it's going to be frozen for a while. That should really raise some red flags for people if the top court in the land can't make definitive call on enforcing our immigration laws. People should be more concerned than they even are now.
We've talked in the past about Governor Greg Abbott and how he's been a little slow to react. He seems to have gotten more forceful lately. What is your take on Governor Abbott and his actions or lack thereof?
I have really mixed feelings on Governor Abbott to this day. We've talked about that in the past. I think that in general, he's done a very poor job of securing the state of Texas, although I am told by people on the ground that the most recent efforts are definitely improvement from where we were before. I just think that the bar is so low at this point in this country that people are happy to see any semblance of force at the border and any semblance of enforcement, but it really should look much more aggressive than it does now. I'll tell you this, while we were on the ground, a couple of weeks ago, like I said, in Mexico, we observed, like I said, Shelby Park looks like the DMZ. The level of enforcement there is really something else. But as soon as you go a mile or two in either direction up the river, it looks a lot different, and it doesn't look like a very serious operation. And I just was kind of troubled to see how it's all, you know, focused in one little area. And I got the sense that that was really focused for the cameras, focused for the show. And so when we crossed over into Piedras Negras, our guides took us right to the riverbank opposite where Shelby Park is. We were standing on the banks of the Rio. And there were about 10, a group of about 10 illegals who were on the banks of the Rio. They had made it onto the U.S. side, but they were stuck in the sand there, hoping to enter and get past the fencing there. And they were kind of just standing there. They had apparently been there for a while. And as soon as we busted out our cameras to film them from the opposite side, Texas DPS and Border Patrol sprang into action. They rolled an airboat down the ramp into the water. They fired up the boat. They made several passes in front of us where our cameras are rolling. Some Texas National Guardsmen rushed the gate with riot shields up to prevent the illegals from running in. Made a big show of things, and it was kind of weird because they had been sitting there dormant until we got the cameras out. And our guide on the ground told us that basically anytime media busts out the cameras, they spring into action to make sure that it looks real good on camera. And it's basically security theater at that point. And then after a few minutes, they packed up the boat, they packed up the riot shields and went back to just kind of milling around near the border fencing. So we just got the sense that a lot of it is security theater. The soldiers that we encountered seemed less than serious. We were with some ex-military of our own. They were shocked at the condition of the soldiers, just being out of code with their uniforms and just seeming like unserious members of the military. And so just the whole thing kind of felt a little off. And it felt like if you looked at it from a 30,000 foot view, you would say, oh, Texas is doing a great job and they're really securing the border. And then you get down on the ground and you really drill into it and you say, there's some holes in this operation and it's a little fishy. I really have mixed feelings on what's going on there, but I do commend the authorities that are doing a decent job, because in some cases we're seeing that Texas police are the only ones cracking down on this at any given time.
Finally, I'd like to talk about Governor DeSantis in Florida. There's certainly concern over a mass influx of Haitians coming in, perhaps through Florida. What has the governor done there, and is it substantive enough?
Well, as a resident of Florida, that issue definitely concerns me. What's amazing, and I just learned this the other day, there's a parole program that the Biden administration launched, I think about 18 months ago or so. It's called CHNV. It's Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And it opens the door to 30,000 residents, citizens of those countries, to fly into the United States on any given month. So every month we're taking up to 30,000 citizens from those countries, and they are being given work authorization and basically two-year permits to stay in the U.S. And we know many of those people are going to stay much longer, of course. Since January of 2023, 138,000 plus Haitian nationals have entered the U.S. via that program. And the numbers look like 350,000 plus Haitians in the past couple of years has been encountered by border authorities or come in through that program. And so that was really news to me. I had forgotten about that program, to see that nearly 500,000 Haitians might be in the U.S. just in the past couple of years made me think that as bad as the situation is with the devolution of Haiti at this point, and the potential that many of them will try to come by sea to Florida, so many of them have already entered by other means, and nearly 150,000 of them have flown into the country. So it's almost like if a few thousand arrive by boat, we of course don't want that, and we do want Governor DeSantis to prevent every last one of them from reaching the country. There are bigger issues at hand, so it's like, you know, watching while what one hand's doing while the other one's really doing all the work, you know, behind your back. That really put into perspective to me that while we are certainly concerned about that issue, so many of them have already reached the U.S. and many of them will settle in Florida, of course, and in Miami and the greater Miami area. But DeSantis appears to be making at least a show of force. I have seen contradictory statements from other local officials about whether or not that's going to work, or if the mission is even properly dictated to them. I've seen also reports from Todd Bensman, actually, at Center for Immigration Studies saying that a CBP source tells him they're being told to allow the boats to land, which would be pretty disturbing, and then to mitigate, you know, the issues with the illegals after they've reached dry land. That disturbed me. These people need to be just picked up from their boats and rounded up and sent right back home. We'll see what happens. They've already started busting boatloads of Haitians out in the Caribbean who have been found with ammunition, with weapons, with night vision goggles, with drugs. The influx has already started, and it remains to be seen what exactly happens if it really picks up.
Dan Lyman, if people want to get more information on the wonderful work that you're doing at BorderHawk, would you tell us the best ways to do that?
Definitely. Everything gets posted at BorderHawk.news every day and on Twitter at BorderHawkNews. You can keep track of all of our reports. And we are putting out a ton of exclusive content right now every day from the border and elsewhere. So I encourage all your listeners to come visit us and have a look.
It's unique and exclusive information that you're not likely to find in other places. Dan Lyman, thanks so much for your efforts, and thank you for joining us today on the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast.
Thank you for highlighting these issues, Rob.
That concludes another edition of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Visit us online at shillingshow.com, where you can directly support this podcast by clicking on the Patreon banner at the top of the page and making a monthly donation. Your support is essential for the continuation of the Shilling Show Unleashed podcast. Until next time.